Hello and welcome to Women with AI. Today, I'm thrilled to have an expert in developing productive partnerships across the Medio ecosystem on the podcast. With extensive experience in strategy and partnerships, I'm looking forward to her sharing her perspectives on using AI to respond to the changing needs and requirements in this fast-moving media industry. But before we jump into our conversation, let me tell you a little bit about her. Fern Potter is Senior Vice President of Strategy and Partnerships at Multilocal Media, a pioneering curation business. Fern has spent 16 years in media, the majority of which in programmatic. She has a firm grasp of technology, data, and its application to benefit advertisers and bridge the gap between consumers with their experience with different brands. Having previously worked in media agencies, leading the global digital strategy for notable brands such as JLR, Diageo, and VWG, understanding advertising and buyer needs and how ad tech can solve for them is her speciality. Fern is motivated by advancements in technology and data, and in her current role leads strategic partnerships globally for Multilocal, adding value across the programmatic ecosystem in bounds. When she's not meticulously picking through the latest industry advancements, she spends her time in the countryside with her sidekick Blue, her gorgeous yellow Labrador, and is apparently an avid F1 fan. So Fern Potter, welcome to Women with AI.
Thanks, Jo. Well, lovely introduction. Much appreciated.
Great to have you.
Lovely to be here.
Before we get, to get us started, what exactly do you do for Multilocal?
Yeah, absolutely. So Multilocal is a curation specialist. The business has been around 5 years. And essentially, we work with various partners across the programmatic ecosystem to add value to their media campaigns through programmatic. So whether that be DSPs, SSPs, agencies and clients. We build partnerships, which I work across globally to make sure that, campaigns are performing and the optimization is working. So we have an extensive network globally and a great team across the world that are dedicated to providing that kind of partnerships and customer service in the new world of curation. It's a relatively nascent industry, and so it's really exciting to be on the forefront of that as it develops and as there's a lot more noise this year around how curation can help solve for various different kind of programmatic inefficiencies that have existed before.
I'd imagine you already use a lot of complicated algorithms. So how is AI sort of impacting on that? Or have you always been using AI, or how do you use it?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Jo, because actually I was talking to a few kind of colleagues and peers when we were having a conversation about appearing on the podcast. And I think the interpretation of AI is actually quite vast. But that said, we've been in the ad tech industry itself, been using the likes of algorithms of machine learning for a long time. And I think AI is a generative step in a direction to really bring about more, to kind of ingest more data and more complex data from this kind of 2D environment to a real 3D environment to bring about decisions and change. So in our business, we've been working with using the iceberg analogy, the kind of underneath all that data processing, data scrutiny, analytics, data interpretation, data completeness, all that framework and foundation that really is required to have rigor in what the AI models are then built upon. And I think this makes for better decision making and more trust and confidence in the outputs that AI models are delivering into business. So we've seen real change. It's gone from essentially perhaps, most used as a categorization and optimization tool into real world kind of examples and almost around this kind of executive assistant where you can build creative decisioning and find opportunities in data that you might not have once been able to do when it was more of a kind of standard algorithms and machine learning protocols. So it's been fascinating to work in that development. We're talking about AI in our industry as something that has been ongoing for a while, but has been a relatively new hype curve, if you want, using the Gartner hype curve as an analogy. Last year it really exploded with ChatGPT, OpenAI, Baird from Google. And I think that has created a lot of opportunity in our business to help with productivity, drive results. But I think top of mind for people is always understanding where the data set that this decisioning is based upon.
Yeah,
and that's really important.
Because how do you make sure that you've got the right data? Are you seeing any bias problems or anything like that? Or where does it come from?
Yeah, I've had a couple of experiences with that, Joe. I think from a business perspective now, we work on a lot of data. Like I said, the company's been around for 5 years and we're using AI to help categorize our audiences. But that's based on 5 years of having a team in place to scrutinize that data. And I'd say about 60% of the data that we're working upon needed and required, an assessment and a quality assurance to make sure that it was then fit for purpose based on what we needed to do as a business. And so the team have been learning as we go on how to make that data more solid, more consistent and reliable, so that the AI that we build into our application to make things quicker, better and stronger is based on something that has a confidence level that we can be assured. Because one of the biggest issues in media is wastage. Now, if we're making decisions on bad data, you're kind of exacerbating that problem for your clients and your businesses. So we've been working hard and there's still a human element. There's a lot of QA that goes into the AI outputs that we get. and it's a, you absolutely do. I think, let's learn from experience. We've spent a lot of time relying on machines, whether it's from a verification perspective, fraud detection, the categorization of YouTube around 10 years ago, where there's a misplacement of how machine learning was categorizing that inventory. And now we don't want to replicate the same dysfunction. So I think there's a real opportunity to making sure that, as I said, there is rigor and there's confidence in the decisioning. And then there's human quality assurance. So that essentially brands at the end of the day aren't wasting media dollar, but also you're providing a brand safe and suitable environment for advertising, and that's crucial to that brand experience. And the other point in experience, I worked in a business several years ago working for a creative agency, and when I talked about completeness of the data, I think there's definite bias in what we have to work with today, and perhaps what we will work with in the future. And there's a real My experience of that is I worked for a business called FCB6, and within that they created a utility called Black and Abroad, which was for domestic travel for the Black community within the US. Now, when we built the platform, there was an inherent bias in the data available, where there was no record from government or on systems, from national parks, etc., of cultural significant locations specifically to Black people. And I think that was something that you then see is like an inherent bias within the data that we're collecting. So it's not only like the individuals that are creating the data, but actually the register of how this information exists already. And you've got to have that kind of keen eye to kind of, I think, that was a blatant miss based on because the business we were working with, that's what we're creating the utility for. But, you could unconsciously miss some of that data bias by just working with what you've had. And so making sure, and, there's a huge opportunity there, which feels quite beautiful in bringing like a CTO and an ethics together. I think that's going to be fascinating over the coming, I always say years, but probably looking at months, to be honest, aren't we? Yeah. To like really the rapid growth of this business. And but to really understand like how AI can exist in a positive way, I think it's those two kind of brains within a business that come together and have, here's the ethical leadership, what that means for data biased, and here's the technical leadership. And I think that I find really fascinating, actually. It's it's a different shift.
Like you need the humans to spot where the data is missing. So it might not just be like that the data is incorrect. It's actually, there isn't that data because it hasn't been collected or it hasn't been saved. And that's what we're finding out. So I guess that's the kind of, it could be a negative, but it's also a positive because actually it's highlighting, as long as you've got the human element checking what the data is and where it is. What excites you about AI?
You know what? I mean, like I said, I get really excited over every technology, but I do feel that there's something here that it's a generational shift. I was reading something on Forbes about us being the transition generation, because we're kind of seeing AI as how it fits into our culture. So not only as a business, not only in ad technology, but as a culture of how, humans interact and work. And I think that transitional shift is interesting because, say, in 10 years' time, it's just going to be intrinsic in everybody's way of working. So we're on the cusp of setting that up, really. And we're at that kind of bleeding edge of understanding, what's right, what's wrong, what works, what doesn't, and mitigating risk as much as we are spotting opportunity. And, I think about my role within a business, as much as strategy is about finding opportunities and partnering with people to realise those, it's also about mitigating the risk of a business. And one of the things I'm quite excited about when it comes to AI, which does sound quite nerdy, but it's about continuity. So when businesses need to be smart and they need to move fast, intellectual property and experience often sits with the individual. I think AI, from a generative perspective, really would help us centralize the intellectual property that sits within people into a business, infrastructure. What we suffer from in business, and especially in ad tech, is shorter tenures of individuals. A C-suite might have a tenure of around 4 years, but actually people at the cutting edge of what's happening on a day-to-day basis with clients and within business, maybe 1 to 2 years. You have disparate systems, whether it's project management, whether it's your LinkedIn communications, whether it's a CRM. So, or someone saves something on a desktop instead of a SharePoint, God forbid. So, being able to centralize all of that intellectual property into something that can provide, de-risk a business in terms of having the continuity outside of people, I think is a real smart move for business in being able to keep propelling forwards. And, I imagine a world where there's a brain that sits in the center that can, that humans act upon, but that can actually tap into historical, positive experiences, but also negative ones. I mean, and unfortunately, as humans, we carry ego. So we are a bit biased to what's good, and talking about what's good and what we've learned in terms of, positive results, positive experiences. So there's a bit of a record loss on what didn't work and what didn't go as expected. And that's a really valuable experience as well. So if there's something you can kind of dehumanize and create a centralized brain, I think, for continuity, that's really smart business management, especially, as I said, in a world where tenure is shorter than it used to be. So that kind of excites me. One thing that I'm not... I'm not an expert in at all, but I'm very interested in how AI is going to kind of influence journalism and content production. That goes back to ethics and trust as well. So I'm kind of watching that evolve. Do we need to be highlighting what has been written by AI versus what's been written by a journalist, and what does that mean for news and communication on a global level? And I think
I agree. That bothers me as well, because you hear about generative AI being like hallucinating, sort of making stuff up and taking it. And I think everything should be labelled, whether it's purely AI, whether it's sort of a combination of human and AI, but because humans get it wrong, just like AI gets it wrong. Like, we had an instance just this week where an article was written about a project that someone, a journalist, just thought, oh great, I'll just write about that, and they did it, but they'd taken all the wrong details and it was the wrong information that got sent out, and we were all panicking, thinking, oh, where's this come from, what's happened? And by speaking to him, it was like, oh well, actually, yeah, I just took this, I thought it would be useful, did that. But that could easily happen with AI, so you still need to have the human element. And as you say, if you've got a sort of central database or gathering all that data and it's freeing up time, then that's going to give us, like the humans, more time to be doing products that AI or the machines aren't capable of, because we've got that expertise still, until AI takes over and becomes more expert. But I don't think it will. I think there's different levels. But I think you're right. It's but you know, where machines are unable to match human performance, we need to make sure that we're just not letting them get carried away.
It's true. It's funny. I've used I transcribe my meeting notes, and then I can use like a ChatGPT or something to then, you know, turn that into an action plan with key actions. Like, that's really useful. However, getting that done and having communications and partnerships with individuals and businesses isn't going to be replaced with AI, because there's a human connection and a kind of a coming together of and collaboration on ideas and what you need to solve for. So AI might be able to provide solutions, but you've got to tell it what your problem is. And I think that we're still going through that transitionary phase. To your point, it's not, human decisioning still needs to happen, human relationships still need to happen, and you know, the data that it's working upon at the end of the day was inputted by somebody. So it's like, you know, as much as it might change and start to self-learn, I think, you know, that comes back to the bias and ethics. Like, what are we talking about? And I was reading the US government, they've actually said for each of the government departments, they need kind of an ethical AI lead. One of the hot topics at the moment with the cookie deprecation is about privacy. And, you know, that's huge for AI. Like, how do you protect your privacy as an individual? How do you protect your privacy as a business, as an entity, as a brand? And I know that the 4A's did a quite extensive paper on this recently, just to be able to kind of write into contractual obligations privacy around AI models, because they are learning, what they're learning from and what we're inputting into them needs to be kind of regulated. So that'll be interesting to see how privacy plays out in the world of AI, because, you know, like with any new adoption of technology, there's kind of resistance, there's push-pull, there's cynicism. We talked before about that Gartner hype curve. It's like, yeah, it's really exciting, but now I'm in a bit of a, maybe the trough of disillusionment, where you do find there's a bit of cynicism, there's resistance to cultural change, but also defining what is AI and what isn't. Articles around grifting come up quite frequently, whereby, you know, people might say they've got something that they haven't, and how do you unpick that? And which is not good for the technology or the industry. But there's as I said, those frameworks, that ethics, really digging into businesses and understanding what they're building those models upon and how their models work, I think it's really advantageous for anybody that's working with a business with AI or an AI.
Because the world
business of
cookies completely changed, didn't it? And I suppose it's trying to make it better for the customer. So, you know, I mean, so how is AI sort of affecting how people see advertisements and how they get channeled?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I know definitely from a creativity perspective that, you know, we're having an influencer perspective. There's a lot more AI technology that can help build creative quicker and do decisioning on the fly. I think that poses problems that we've experienced before when, like, dynamic creative optimization came into play with programmatic, whereby you know, there still needed to be an approval system for something that was automated, you know, to make sure that brands are happy with that content. So how that looks, I think there's still an approval issue that AI might be able to do it quicker, faster, better, but not if there still needs to be a kind of approval and guidelines and hurdles to move through. But I talked to my mum about it, to be honest, because also you can get really caught up in this, you know, in the industry and in the spin, and forget that actually as people, as a general public, like, what do they expect out of that technology? How do they feel about it? Which was the same with privacy, right? When all the cookie pop-ups came up, you're like, what does that even mean when it comes to consent? My mum was saying, I think to your point before that you mentioned, Jo, it's like, you know, I want to know if AI's written an article, if the content I'm reading is from a journalist. Maybe she's more likely to follow journalists than she is to follow titles when it comes to the, you know, her consumption of news. And so that might be kind of a fundamental shift, which could be positive. But yeah, who knows, there's a lot to kind of work through, I think, as we said, kind of culturally
And spotting,
and as
if
an
you're speaking to
industry.
a bot, because quite often you go on something, and chat, and you do it, and then you realise, oh no, this isn't an actual person. This is just giving you some standard answers. But the thing is, the more you confuse it, you know that it will eventually go, would you like to chat to a real person? You're like, yes. Yes, I'm not going to give you
Yes,
any of
please. Yeah. It is. So
the
it's like
phones.
you'd
How do you use AI in your, well, I was going
yeah.
to say, in your personal life? But I guess, you know, if you've got a Siri or an Alexa, you do.
Yeah, I'm not, do you know what? I'm not too good on the voice activated technology. I always have this fear that it listens to everything. But you know, there's definitely it's like a personal assistant for note taking, action plans. I mean, it can speed all that up and it does the heavy lifting, which I think is really beneficial. And you know, we do in business look at it for you know, suggestions. So when we're curating inventory, we can layer the AI technology within it to kind of find suggestions based on what we're already running. And that categorization is powerful, but as I said, only if the data is correct that you've put in, and it still has to be quality assured by a team of actual people. So as much as there's AI, there's also eyes.
Well, yeah, and it's getting that data, isn't it? And that's where, like, coming back to, like, the as you said, like, data, sorry, bias and ethics. And it's like, if there are whole chunks of data missing, and that's my worry. And that's, you know, sort of, you know, this is women with AI, and it's with amplifying the voices and perspectives of women working in the field, but also having that kind of underlying thought, is it going to affect women more than men, or is it about race? Is it not about gender? And I think you're right, it's just making sure that that data is there. But I think that's why you need men and women and all races, all nationalities, kind of checking it. You can't just let it run off, and yeah, otherwise you're right, we're not riding the
Yeah,
hype curve, but we're
absolutely.
in the trough of disappointment. But we can change it.
It's so true. If you we can, and I think that's the main thing, isn't it? It's like, if there's notable observation that this is a risk that needs mitigating to make AI work for everybody, and make it a really, the powerful tool it could be, that, you know, these observations need to happen now, and they need to be solved for now, and there needs to be people that are actively ensuring that data bias and ethical use of data ensures that AI becomes, you know, a global platform for people. Like we said, it's a cultural shift as well as it being a technology shift. And so, if we've got people looking at that now, I think that poses as puts us in a good position for the
Definitely. It
future.
feels like this is, yeah, an exciting time, I think. I hope.
Yeah, it's like, you know, don't say you're on that cusp, you're on that bleeding edge of change, and you know that we're probably going to feel that for a while. And as much that Gartner hype curve will probably happen on a daily basis with something you've read or an application that you've seen of AI that you disagree with. I mean, I was talking in somebody raised there
Oh
was
my
a
goodness.
AI beauty pageant that one of the gaming companies had launched, which was for women. And it's just disgusting, to be honest, to think of, like, AI used in that way. And there was a prize reward, and you're like, seriously, have we not got past this? I mean, and so I think pointing out bad actors, that's a real blatant one, when it comes to bias and ethics. But also, again, from a business, even good actors, just really having your eyes open and scrutinizing that application and what the data's built on. Because, you know, a lot of the data isn't owned, it's public information. And so, how are, you know, anybody that's applying AI on top of that, how are they making sure that data is complete
Yeah, it's
and
calling it out, isn't it? And like
unbiased?
you said, because I worry about that. You know, I've got two young nieces, and it's that what that pressure that's going to be on them. Well, all young children, whether you're male or female. And did you see the Dove advert recently? They've done a kind of new advert saying, you know, what is beauty? And it's sort of showing all this AI generated beauty content and how, you know, soul destroying and devastating it can be if you don't look like that. But actually, if you need to show real women, and I'm just using women now because that's what the Dove advert was focusing on, you know, for their moisturizer and what have you. And it's just really refreshing. I mean, they were actually then using AI generated images in the advert. rather than real women. So
interesting. Not quite.
Yeah.
AI. Reality
kind
AI.
Kind of that fake AI. And AI, I think the thing is, the more you look at it, the more you spot it. But a young child doesn't have that experience, hasn't looked as many images as you or I have or anyone over a certain age, that you're just not used to it. So you probably do look at them and think, oh, goodness, is that how my skin's supposed to look? Is that how my eyes are supposed to be, you know, sparkling? Or, I don't know, so it is, that's the scary bit.
It is scary. It's a concern, isn't it? You think, actually, we've been, like, touching up photos and photoshopping images for quite a while. And, you know, but this is... Yeah, I mean, I was, like, wondering, can I have a filter on? But there's that evolution. Like you said, you've got, I think, in your mind, from a generational perspective, you know that's happened. But if fast forward 10 years, where everything's kind of self-perpetuated AI, how do you have that critical analysis of going, actually, people don't look like that? I know you could probably just go outside and you'd have some mates and stuff, but there's something in it that is quite plays on the human psychological kind of nature of people. And you know, we see it now with young women and, as you said, young boys as well, having image issues because of what they see through social content. Does that become more of a mainstream problem outside of the walled gardens? Who knows? But there's definitely, there's a responsibility there, isn't there, for all of us to make sure there's a reality?
I think it's, we need it to help us, not just take over, and we shouldn't be aspiring to it. It should be aspiring to us.
Yeah, that's quite right, actually. That's a good way, the good perspective of it. You know, it should, for the greater good, there's so many awesome applications, you know, outside of ad tech. If you look at big enterprise businesses like the NHS or something, you look at surgery, you look at agriculture, like the way AI is shifting those businesses is fascinating. I think, you know, ad tech's probably a small part of how we can deliver real benefits, but there's always going to be those kind of hurdles along the way of it being used inappropriately applicated.
This
I guess
has been fascinating. Like, do you do any sort of research yourself, or have you got any recommendations for places for people to sort of learn about what you do or about using AI?
We use it as a business. We're using it as an application into our main core business. It's not something. We're kind of integrating it as we go. As an individual, I do a lot of research, and I'd say, you know, actually, the best people and resource that I have is the ad tech community, that we just talk to each other. You can have those honest conversations about what works and what doesn't, and as I said, just hearing conversations this morning about what is the definition of AI is really fascinating. So but in terms of recommended reading, I mean, Microsoft Copilot is really fascinating, and looking at enterprise level AI companies, I think they're on the cusp. It's also good to read some of the kind of edge cases and a bit more of the conspiracy theories around AI, get a holistic view. So, you know, LinkedIn's always a valuable asset for trying to find that information.
And people can find you on LinkedIn, I'm guessing?
Yeah, they can, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on Women with AI.
Oh, thank you so much, Jo. It was lovely. Thanks for having me.